Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. It's May 26, 2022. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Vivian Headings. Welcome, Vivian. I'm so glad to have you with me.
Thank you very much.
Well, you've listened to some of these, so you know we start at the beginning. And I realize I don't know a whole lot about you, so please tell us, where were you born?
I was born in Indianapolis, Indiana.
And was that a home area for your parents, or what's the story there?
My parents both came from Wayne County, Ohio. They had grown up in the Swiss Mennonite community there. My father went to medical school in Indianapolis. And when he left for medical school, his cohorts and family said, "Oh, here's one more young man, one good man lost to the church." So they thought going to medical school was going to weaken his faith, but it didn't.
What kind of doctor did he become?
He became a general practitioner or family doctor. He made house calls out into the Amish country, and he was one of the very few Mennonite doctors. So he had a large clientele of Amish and Mennonite folk, but also other town folk.
So did he stay in Indianapolis, or did you go up elsewhere?
When he finished with his medical training and his internship, and I was born in that last year of his internship, we moved to Goshen, Indiana, and settled there. I think we were in several rented houses before we even bought a house in the town.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
I have one brother and four sisters, and I'm the second oldest. I'm between the oldest daughter and the boy. So that kind of eclipsed, well, some of my activities anyhow.
So did you pretty much grow up in Goshen then?
Most of my growing up years, that's where we lived. Although during World War II, my father would have been drafted, but he took alternate service in Puerto Rico. And after he had been there a year, he was able to persuade MCC to move the family down with him. So we were there for two more years.
So for the first year of his service, he just went alone and the family stayed in Indiana?
Yes.
How old were you when that happened?
I was in first grade, I think, when he left. It was at the end of second grade that, and I was seven when we went to Puerto Rico.
Tell me about what it was like to spend a couple of years in Puerto Rico at that wonderful young age.
It was pretty great. I learned so much. When we flew down from Miami, my mother had sold the house and sold the car, and one of her brothers came with us, which was a family of four by that time, to go by train to Philadelphia and then Miami. And we flew to Puerto Rico from Miami. And I remember distinctly that I was 7 years old and I was had a new jumper and I didn't want to put a blouse on. I said, "Mama, it's going to be hot up there closer to the sun when we fly."
And that was your first plane ride, I'm guessing.
Exactly.
So what were your living arrangements there in Puerto Rico?
At first, we took over the common rooms of the dormitory, the six of us, two parents and four children. And the unit built a concrete hurricane-proof house for us on the site of the hospital and clinic. And while we were there, they started building a church building. And my father knew that in his home county, they were tearing down an old school. So he managed to buy or somehow persuade them to send the old school bell to the unit so they could use that for a church bell.
What was it like going to school? What was that situation? Were you with expats or with the local people? Or
the first year my mother taught us, she had taught school to earn money to go to nurses training. And so she had both teaching and nursing under her skin. And she taught us, there was an eighth grader, a Weldon Troyer, who later on became a physician in Goshen, Indiana. And Barbara, my older sister, who was in fourth grade, and I was in third grade. And the other little boy was John's age. The son of the director of the unit there was John's age, and he joined John for kindergarten. So mother was teaching six of us in an 8x10 kitchen. And we had our little desks and our, I don't know where they got the textbooks, but we were studying the usual things that fourth, third, and kindergartners and eighth graders do. So,
what were you doing for fun during those years? Now, this was a kind of a major change from Indiana to Puerto Rico, culture and temperature and all kinds of things.
That's right. One of the first things we learned was that we could no longer go barefoot because of the hookworms in the soil there. And so, though it was summer all the time, we couldn't run barefoot like we used to. We had the run of the unit, and neighbor kids came, especially neighbor girls, came and looked at us, and we became friends, and we learned some Spanish games, children's games, and played with them. And there was an experimental hog farm at the place, and they were raising big hogs. So we'd go down and talk to the pigs sometimes. And while we were there, the Heifer Project was going to send a bunch of pregnant heifers to Spain, and they couldn't get it through there. So my dad, who was a friend of the person who thought up Heifer Project in Indiana, persuaded him to ship those Holstein cows to La Plata, where we were. So they got into the cow barn down there, and we kids used to go down. We picked out our favorite cows and watched them. The interesting follow-up on that was when I went back to Puerto Rico after Verl and I were married. He had meetings there one for a little while, and we went to La Plata, but between San Juan and La Plata, there were many, many hills covered with black and white Holstein cows, which had not been the case when we were kids.
So that sounds like it was fairly successful.
I think it probably was. And my dad, being a farmer, was teaching the farmers how to milk with two hands, because they were holding a bottle with one hand and milking with the other hand.
So I trust that your father's assignment there was that he was working as a doctor. Is that true?
That's right, in the clinic and the hospital at La Plata. There were two doctors, Dr. George Troyer and he, and eventually that hospital got moved to Aguanito, Puerto Rico, and some of our friends and acquaintances have been there. You know, Artie and Bill Alberts were there later on, but not when we were there, but they were at Aguanito, where the new project was.
And what were your parents' names?
My father was H. Claire Amstutz, my mother Florence.
Since your mother had all this training, did she ever work outside the home while you were growing up?
When we were in Puerto Rico, she taught two nurses' aides classes, at least that I remember. So, yes, but she, with four children to look after, that was quite almost a full-time task there, but not quite. Yeah, and after we were grown, then she, I guess the only thing I really remember about her working out of the home was after I left college, she was teaching phys ed at one of the junior high schools. But other than that, she had quite enough to do with with being at home and found things that she could do.
So was the idea all along that after these 2 years of the whole family being in Puerto Rico, that you would go back to Indiana, or where did you actually go?
Yes, we went back to Goshen, Indiana, and I finished school there and went to college there. I went to the nursing program there, which was a relatively new program.
At Goshen College?
Yes.
Did you go to public school for, say, junior high and high school?
Yes, I. this was an interesting thing to me to look back on. When I was in the sixth grade, we moved to a place we bought just a mile outside of Goshen, and I went to Waterford School, which was an eighth-grade school. And I was astounded because most of the kids there had been at the same school all their lives. And I had been to one school in kindergarten because the local school in Goshen there did not have a kindergarten. I went to the next school over. In first and second grade, I was at a different school because we had bought a house and moved. In third grade, my mother taught us in Puerto Rico. Fourth grade was a boarding school in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Barbara and I went there. It was a Presbyterian-run school. The boarders were girls, but they had boys up to the sixth grade mingling as day students. But the high school girls didn't have boys to contend with in their classes. But they could be boarders. So that was an interesting experience in itself. Fifth grade, we came back from Puerto Rico and we rented a house for a year. It was right across the street from the college. And sixth grade, we had bought the house where my family finished growing up. When I was in fifth grade is when the last two babies were born, twins, twin girls. So we had six kids, five girls, which made for a lively household.
So you had been in so many different situations in school, I'm sure it was surprising to find that some people were in the same school the whole time.
Right.
Which high school did you go to?
I went to Goshen High School 3 years, and the fourth year was the first year that Bethany Christian High School had opened. And so being a senior with the last name starting with A, I was the first graduate from Bethany Christian High School.
Congratulations, many decades later. Wow.
That always tickled me a little bit.
So was the decision to go to Bethany yours or your family's, or did you make that together? I mean, being a senior, like, that's kind of a critical time, isn't it?
Yes, but I was somehow, my dad was on the committee that helped develop that, and he was excited about it, and he hoped that I would go. My older sister had done her senior year at Heston College, which had a high school then, but I thought it would be fun to be in a new place and make it interesting. And indeed, it was a really interesting year. I worked on the yearbook, and at a big high school like Goshen High School, I would never have thought to do that. And most of the students, there were like 105 students in the whole school, and 98 of them were in the choir. And the choir went to a state choir contest, and we did very well with our singing, and they asked us to sight read a new song that we had never sung before and to practice it for about 15 minutes. And when we came out and sang it for the judges, they said, "Are you sure you never have sung this one before?" So we kind of awed the judges with our a cappella singing.
I'm guessing that at that point, it would be safe to say that the vast majority of those students were Mennonites and had been raised singing in Mennonite churches.
Exactly, exactly.
So you went far away to Goshen College to go to college, and you said you were in the nursing program? How did you decide to be a nurse? I mean, it's probably a silly question. Look at your family, but...
Yes. I won't say it's a silly question, but yes, I think from the time I was a little girl, I wanted to be a nurse. When Barbara and I were preschoolers. My mother had made us a little nursing caps and aprons, and we played nurses.
Did she become a nurse as well?
Barbara wanted to be a doctor, but my father said, oh, that's no job for a woman. And so she went into the nursing program. But when my youngest, one of the twins came along and said, I want to be a doctor, things had changed, and she got to be a pediatrician. So we do have a medical family.
So as you were getting your nurse's training, was there some specific part of nursing that you were attracted to?
Not at the time, but early in my career, my first job was to be a night nurse on a medical ward, and I didn't enjoy that very much. And I thought, what I really want to do is to be a evening nurse on the surgical ward, because then you comfort your patients and you get them ready for sleep and put them to bed, and then you go home and sleep. But it happened that one of the nurses on the pediatrics ward needed another staff person, and she asked me if I would like to do pediatric nursing. And I thought that would be a wonderful thing. And that was my specialty ever since.
So was that very first job there in Goshen, or did you go somewhere else?
It was at Elkhart Hospital, where we had trained as students.
So how long were you there, and what came next?
Well, I was there for 2 years, and then after a summer hiatus, I went to Bloomington, Illinois, to the Mennonite Hospital School of Nursing. And I taught medical surgical nursing for 2 years. And then I met Verl, and that drew me off to Michigan. So went to Michigan and married a doctor, even though when my older sister became engaged to a doctor, I said, I'll never marry a doctor. I knew too much what that demands on the doctor in the family would be. And I thought, I'm not going to do that. But it has a way of...
Be careful what you say, right?
Laughing at our pronouncements.
So what kind of a doctor was Verl?
Verl, after he finished his MD training and a year of internship in Seattle, Washington, which, you know, I accompanied him with, he went back to Michigan and got a PhD in human genetics. And so I remember we had talked at some time about being missionary, doctor, and nurse, but I remember the day he came home from his internship and he said, I want to be a geneticist. Genetics is the medicine of the future. So he went back to Michigan, and he was in training there for another 3 years, maybe, and doing research and that kind of thing. I thought, oh, if he's a researcher, he can have his time as his own. But the first year we were married, we went to a New Year's Eve party. And when that party was over, he said, we have to stop at the lab on the way home. I have an experiment that needs stopping. I thought, wow. I thought being a researcher's wife was going to be easier than a doctor's wife. But I had a rude awakening there.
And which part of Michigan?
Ann Arbor.
And that has a pretty good reputation for being a medical center kind of place, doesn't it?
Yes. And I was working in the hospital there, and I was on the children's unit. I was on the, what they called the contage ward. In other words, we had kids that could be treated with antibiotics and sent home. When I first started that, I thought I wasn't going to do much with that. I mean, I didn't know if I would like that, but I found out that, yeah, we could treat our kids and send them home. And the other units, the medical and the surgical, had all kinds of insolvable problems. So I was happy where I was.
So how long did you stay in Ann Arbor?
Probably 3 more years after he graduated from med school. In that time, I had my two older daughters, babies. Jennifer was born in Seattle while Earl was internship, and Emily was born in Ann Arbor. And then our third daughter was born in Washington, D.C. after we moved there for Burl's work.
And where was he actually working?
He was at Howard University, and they had a fledgling genetics unit there. One physician and maybe one counselor. And he was glad to join them to help develop the genetics program there.
Did you live right in Washington, D.C., or did you live on the outskirts?
Well, the first year we rented a house on the outskirts, and the second year we had bought a house on the north edge of Washington itself, yes. But we didn't stay there for all the time Burl was teaching, because a lot of interesting things happened. So that we were...
Yeah, I can tell that we need like about 6 hours instead of just a half hour here. But I'm going to rush you way, way down the road. You somehow at some point ended up in Portland, Oregon. Can you tell me about how that happened?
Yes, as our daughters grew up and found husbands and work, my oldest daughter and her husband did internships. Medical internships at Stanford University in San Francisco. And then Emily and her husband moved west. And then my third daughter, Caroline, moved west to be with Emily. And they were in Seattle. So when Caroline got married to Drew, then he lived in Portland, but his sister had lived in Seattle and they got acquainted through her. So she moved to Portland, and Verla and I used to visit her, well, visit the girls at least once a year, maybe twice, flying out to wherever we could to be with them. And I had thought that if ever I became a widow, I would want to come to Portland and live, because that would be in between the other two girls, but have a daughter here in Portland. So when Verla eventually passed away, I decided, well, I had already thought of what I might do. And at that point, when he died, we were living in West Virginia, and he had been commuting to work from there in the panhandle there, which is not too far from Washington, D.C.
So what year did you actually move to Portland?
That was 2013, a year after Burl died. And I remember... when we were in Washington, D.C., we were part of Church of the Savior, but we were also part of a group of Mennonites that met Sunday evenings, like a small group. And when we were in West Virginia, we were part of a Presbyterian church. And I always thought of myself as a Presbyterian Mennonite, with a Presbyterian being the adjective, because I just wanted to be a Mennonite. And I thought, if I ever leave, I'm going to find a Mennonite church. And so I did.
Had you visited Portland Mennonite when you came to see your daughter ever, or was this a whole new thing when you moved here?
It was a new thing. Caroline and Drew were unchurched. They were the ones that are spiritual, but not but not churchy. I forget why you say that.
Well, I'm not affiliated with any specific church.
Yeah, yeah. But anyhow, I remember the first day I went to church. It was Mother's Day, and Caroline took me down to the church on 35th and Main, and nobody was there. And I thought, what? What church closes itself completely down?
And now we know what church does that. So tell me where they were.
Yeah. So next Sunday I went back, because they had a notice on the door saying, this week we are at the coast.
Portland Mennonite has its retreat on Mother's Day weekend, and they still do, out on the Oregon coast.
Yes. So I went back, and I was very pleased with what I had found, and it just felt right to me. to be with the group. It took me a while to get to know people because I was never I'm an introvert, and it's not all that easy. But Linda Smith and a few others invited me to different groups, and that's the way I found my way in, especially Linda's knitting group.
And as we're finishing up here, you also served on the leadership table for some years. I think you're just recently off of that. Is that correct?
That's right. I finished my two terms in December.
And what was that experience like for you?
Well, it was quite different from being on the leadership table at the Presbyterian Church, I must say. But I was just so, I don't know what word to use, amazed. Amazed at the way the table operated and how charitable the people were toward each other, you know, listening carefully. If they disagreed, it was carefully worded disagreement, not to poke fun or pain to other people, but such thoughtful and loving ways of doing the business that needed to be done. And a little more life there than cut and dried business meetings. And I knew that when I went off the table, I would be relieved, but I would miss it a lot because of the spirit that flowed between the persons on the table. And we had some pretty tough things to talk about during the time I was on.
And do you miss it?
Well, I got kind of tired. I'm sort of old.
Thank you on behalf of the congregation for your service for all of those years. And thank you so much for being my guest. We've just touched the tip of the iceberg of your amazing stories and your lives, but thank you so much for sharing with us.
I'm glad to have been able to do that.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.